Welcome to Healthcare is Hard, a podcast for insiders. Each episode, LRV Health's Keith Figlioli will talk to the healthcare insiders who are helping to fundamentally transform our healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Salemi. Welcome back to Healthcare is Hard, a podcast for insiders. I'll start our conversation with Keith Figlioli, our great host from LRV Health, in just a moment. But I did want to let you know that the Digital Healthcare Innovation Summit is happening on December 10th. You can go to dhis.net to register. The early bird deadline expires on Friday, so please don't wait. And when you do register, please use the code DHIS10. That's DHIS10. You'll save yourself $100. Now, let's begin our conversation with Keith. Keith, it's been a long summer. We haven't talked in a long time. How are you, our host, Keith Figlioli of LRV Health?
I am doing terrific and refreshed, no less, since we took a little time off this summer. So I feel like everybody's going to come out of the gun hot in September
as everybody Absolutely. Took a little time off. And I want to start off our listeners with the information they need. This, as we explained, we had our first season. I thought it went really well. Thought you brought some great voices to the podcast. Take a moment, though, to tell us and remind us about LRV Health. What is your focus? Where are you investing? Who are your partners?
Yeah, so I think, you know, a lot of this came about as part of an extension of the LRV Health platform and what you all have been doing with your digital health conferences. And we, you know, LRV Health is a unique sort of collaborative, what I keep calling a collaborative investing platform. And what does that mean? That ultimately means is we become extensions of strategic healthcare systems and healthcare payers and other strategic even healthcare vendors in the investing cycle and in the disruption cycle. And so we think about disruption maybe a little bit different than most, and we think about disruption from the inside out, hence why we built the platform and the extension on the podcast around inside healthcare and this idea of healthcare is hard, is that we're sitting in the middle of the system trying to figure out what is disruption? How do you think about innovation? How do you think the transformation of digital activities, what does that do to the various organizations? And how do we partner with them to invest first and foremost and help them translate a lot of these disruption themes into operating procedures and processes and the way they go about doing their business and the way they think about their strategies? And so it's been a really, really successful platform build up. Our platform's been around for 20 plus years. Our recent fund, our fourth fund in those 20 years, has just come to completion. And we're actively investing out of that fund. And we invest specifically in healthcare IT, tech enabled services. And we actually do a little bit of device and diagnostics as well, given some of the conversion on that. What we don't do is anything in the biotech area. And we have 15 different strategic partners that are either health systems, health payers or vendors across about 27, 28 different states that deliver care to about 75 to 80 million Americans. So we have this massive network that gives us a pretty unique vantage point into how to think about different investing and disruption trends.
That's terrific. And I think one thing that this podcast has shown is, there's a feeling out there outside of, held by those outside of healthcare, that people inside of healthcare, hospital executives and payer execs in particular, are looking to innovate. And that's clearly not true. I mean, the people you're talking to, I think, are bringing, explaining how they're trying to bring fresh ideas to what they do. And your guest today, Terry Shaw, president and CEO of Advent Health, is definitely one of those people. They're really looking internally and they're looking hard. Tell us a bit about Advent Health. What do we need to know about them?
Yeah, so Advent Health, you know, it's interesting. When we started this podcast, one of the first people that came to mind was actually Terry Shaw to do this, because I've been so intrigued and also honored to work with him for a number of years throughout my career, and have sort of the utmost respect for him in terms of his ability to operate in the environment that we're all in healthcare. I mean, Advent Health is a faith-based system based out of Orlando. A large integrated healthcare delivery system with a number of different sites of care, including, I think, over 45, 48 different hospitals, campuses. And they've always sort of been on the next trend from what I could tell in my experience with them. And specifically Terry came up from the finance side of the business, was the CFO for a long period of time at Advent and what used to be called Adventus Health before the name changed to Advent Health. And he then transitioned into the CEO job over the last, I think, almost 3 years now, and has done just a tremendous job building this footprint. And most importantly, in the light of a faith-based system and being very focused on why we're all doing this. I think where I've had such great respect for him is his ability, not only from a financial angle and upbringing and understanding of the world, because he's got such a laser focus on how do you drive down the total cost of care, but really doing everything and putting everything in place in a very pragmatic and personal and meaningful way, given the faith-based orientation of this particular system and more importantly of him.
And I love the way he and Advent Health is looking at healthcare. And one thing, I don't want to give away too much, but halfway through, I think they have he explains the three questions that they ask of patients who come into Advent Health to really sort of get a sense of, from them, from the patient right off as to how they're doing in life, not only how they're doing in health. And I don't want to give out too much information about that because I think it's a really big part of the conversation. But what was your takeaway from this meeting, from this conversation? Because I do think that they're just really looking hard at how they're delivering care. I think in a way that's going to definitely produce some new ways of treating patients, not only medically, but I think on a back office kind of way as well.
Yeah, and I think that there's two sides of that takeaway, one of which is, first and foremost, back to my point, I wanted to get him on the podcast because I just think everybody will appreciate hearing his story. I've not only had many, many one-on-ones with him over the years, but also I've heard him talk at JP Morgan, talk at other events, and he always captivates the audience with the way he does tell a lot of stories and the situations that they're in and what he's doing, more importantly, from a strategic lens. And so first takeaway is I just wanted to get him out there and get him on the podcast and get people exposed to him, given how much respect I have for him. I think second is, and Penny Wheeler, Dr. Penny Wheeler from Allina, the present CEO of Allina, talked about this as well on the podcast a number of episodes back, which is this idea of whole person care. I think, people are talking about social determinants, people are talking about this whole person care, but here's many, many leaders across this country in very different regions delivering care, thinking about this idea of whole person care now in a way that frankly was not thought about a number of years ago. And then finally is this laser focus on cost. I have quoted him time and time again on this point I'm about to say, is that, he'll go into a budget cycle and tell every one of his leaders, listen, every year expect 1% plus inflation coming out of the budget. And I asked him that question during the podcast, not to expose too much of it, but that level of discipline in this type of environment is not only what's needed, it is critical to the future success and more importantly to the thinking of all of healthcare across this country when we're starting to approach 20% of GDP. And I think you need both sides of those lenses. You need this idea of whole person care, doing the right thing for your community, but you have to do it in a way that lowers the total cost of care. Because frankly, our country and our system cannot afford the continual increase in costs across our entire healthcare ecosystem.
Terrific. Well, it's a great conversation. I'm glad you were able to get him on the podcast. It's a great way to start season two. And let's hear from Terry Shaw, the president and CEO of Advent Health.
I'm happy to be sitting in front of Terry Shaw, the president and CEO of Advent Health. Terry, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Terry, it's fun. I say this in every podcast. I open up everyone the same way because a lot of times people don't just get to understand your background and they'd love to sort of understand your background a little bit more. We'd love to learn a little bit more about not only you, but how you got into this crazy world of healthcare.
It was very simple. When I was in college, they had one summer intern at Advent Health, and it was me. And I did that for a summer. And I got two job offers, and this was the best one, and that's how I got into healthcare. So I tell people healthcare chose me. I didn't choose healthcare, and I really didn't turn my heart into healthcare until I'd been in the business about 5 years. And after 5 years, I could tell it was something that I really wanted to do for the rest of my life.
So you somehow, you know, you planned it all. You got there. It was very, very planned and put forth.
Yeah, no, it was not planned. I will tell you, I come from a family of healthcare providers. My mom's a nurse. My dad, X-ray technician.
Okay.
He is a doctorate in health sciences.
Right.
He ran the health sciences for a college in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I do come from a family of healthcare providers, and so being in a hospital was something that I was very comfortable with. But no, I didn't think of being in the business of healthcare as a career. Yeah.
But it was in the swim lane of the family.
In the swim lane of the family.
Yeah, perfect. And then tell us a little bit, so you recently had a brand change with Advent Health being the new brand. Tell us a little bit about Advent Health, the history of the brand, why the brand changed, and also the size and footprint of the organization.
You know, before we did the brand change, we were an organization that had grown from $2 billion to $11 billion over a span of about 20 years. And we had accumulated 30 different brands across our market. And we looked at where we wanted to go for the next 15 years and decided that we had a platform that we would like to take to multiple markets. And we had a way of introducing healthcare to consumers in a way that we wanted to have to be common across our footprint, not only today, but in the future. And we were pretty clear we needed one brand to do that.
Got it. And give us the size and scale. So some people know this, some people don't, because it's a pretty sizable system.
Well, so this in 2019, will be about $12 billion. So we're certainly not the biggest. We're not the smallest. And in 2000, we were $2
billion. Wow.
So from 2000 to 2019, from 2 to 12 billion.
Wow.
And it's all been very generic growth, meaning one here, one there, couple of here, build one, buy one. There's not been a merging of systems.
Right.
And it's just been very nice, steady growth.
In multiple markets, so lion's share of the work, obviously here in Florida, but you have a couple other, even JVs as well.
Sure, we have a JV in the Denver market with now Common Spirit Health, and we have a JV in the Chicago market with Ascension Healthcare. We have a JV in the Fort Worth, Dallas marketplace with Texas Health Resources. We're also in Kansas City and in Georgia and in Kentucky. And so our footprint's across 9 states.
Wow. So I don't think a lot of people know that. I think people sort of think of you as sort of Orlando-based and the big footprint here.
And the Orlando-based footprint was the home of the Florida Hospital Sanitarium back in 1908.
Right.
And that was, since 1908, that organization has grown into what it is today in the Orlando marketplace.
That's incredible. And that's the part I touched on this with somebody a couple of podcast episodes ago, which is I think people lose track of the history of healthcare and really how these things have evolved, you know, going all the way back to the missionary days and the things that are going on. And I always find it fascinating, obviously, with a faith-based system, you know, we try to talk about that a lot in a few of our faith-based discussions, which is it's important. It's an absolute cultural attribute. I know you've talked about this in the past a bunch, but I know that's core to the belief system.
Absolutely. We are a faith-based organization. Yeah. We are operated by the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and the healthcare message is viewed as the right arm of the church, and that's something that's been a part of our organization since its founding, and it's still here live and well today.
Got it. So I've known you for a little bit. I've always been in awe of your ability to execute and operate at this size and scale. I was talking to a few people, and I think I might even have posted this on some social media after the JP Morgan event last January, where you stood up and you spoke and you said something very specific around the cost equation. So I wanted to talk a little bit about sort of cost reduction in healthcare today, but specifically from a health system standpoint. You know, you said basically, listen, I stand up in front of my team every year, we run a budget cycle, and I tell them every single year they're used to it, it's 1% plus inflation is coming out of our operating costs. How do you think about that? Maybe I got it wrong.
So. No, you don't have it wrong at all. Our costs as a percentage of Medicare are higher than Medicare. Now listen, I have some community hospitals that run at 105% of Medicare, But our downtown quaternary care facility runs at 130% of Medicare, and you roll the company average together, and we're clear that based upon the demographics in this country and how we get paid, we're going to have to bend the cost curve every year for the next 10 years at a minimum.
Right.
So every year it is, how do we take our costs down another percent of Medicare? And so in order to do that, you have to take out inflation too. And it is a constant, ever-pressing thought process on everything that we do. And it doesn't get done without a lot of thought and teamwork. And the group here has really been good at figuring out what needs to be done to drive our costs down. I believe our payment systems are moving more towards Medicare than anything else. Mm-hmm. And the faster we figure out a way to operate a health system with less costs, the better off we're going to be in the future.
Right. So if you broaden that lens, or probably oversimplify it to your point about Medicare, if you think about Medicare rates, if you could think about your budget cycle at that mindset of that reduced reimbursement rate, that's the path you're on.
That's the path we're on.
Yeah.
And every year it's a new path.
Right.
Every year is a new budget cycle.
Right.
But you just don't magically leg into it every year. That means all the time with everything that you do, you're thinking about, how do I make that more efficient, and how, when is it going to show up, and when can I count on this new thing making my costs go down as the revenue curve bends? Just think about this. From 2020 to 2030 in this country alone, we're almost going to double the number of Medicare people
right.
in the country.
Right.
Whether we do anything in healthcare from a rate perspective or not, the percentage of people that are going to be paying us Medicare is going to go up. Over the next 10 years, our payer mix is going to change, and we are going to have a cost system that's less in the future than it is today.
Is that why you see a lot, your mindset, why you're seeing a lot of the private equity gang kind of plow into a lot of these kind of roll-ups around Medicaid, and seeing a lot of newcos even around Medicare? Do you think that's what's going on in that kind of investment movement? Because, you know, you've got the One Medicals, the Oaks, you got, you know, every flavor of them, and then you've got big roll-ups taking place in private equity.
So I don't run a private equity firm, and so I don't want to speak for what they're seeing. But in the Medicare and the Medicaid space, both of those groups of people, both at the state level and at the federal government level,
yeah.
they're looking for ways to take care of broad groups of people and do it more economically.
Right.
And they're putting money into managed Medicare and Medicaid that is allowing very smart people to take risk across a broad group of people
yeah.
and do it very economically and frankly make money doing it.
Right.
Private equity doesn't chase things that doesn't have a return on the end of it.
Yep.
So if you just follow the money,
right.
really smart people have figured out this might not be a bad place to be for a while.
Right, exactly. And then when you think about the cost reduction, your levers, end of the day, we used to joke about this when I was at Premier, it's staff and stuff most days, right? I mean, do you have many more levers than that when you start thinking about where you're taking cost out?
You do. So in the healthcare business, you're right, it is staff and supplies,
yep.
obviously. But it's not just that, it is how you look at taking care of a group of people, and whether that classification of patient really needs to be in your hospital or not,
right.
or can you wrap that with something that's technologically advanced that would allow you to provide that care in a less acute setting just as well as you could in the hospital and have it cost a lot less money.
Right.
So it's the care continuum that you really have to be diligent about working on.
So we had an interview with Gary Bisbee, the founder of HMA, a couple of episodes.
Yeah, I know Gary well.
Yeah, so a couple episodes ago. And he said, hands down, it was like the firmest statement he said through the entire discussion, that the clinical enterprise needs to be completely redesigned. And you're nodding, so I assume you agree with that.
Well, so when you come into the hospital for open heart surgery, you're going to get it my way.
Right.
I'm sorry, but it just is what it is. You come in for brain surgery, there's a lot of things you're going to come in for in the hospital. You're going to get it somebody else's way.
Mm-hmm.
But when you really think about caring for a broad group of people in a marketplace, and you're really incentivized to do that well, you start getting into the right things. That's a part of what Gary thinks is the care continuum, social determinants of health. What can we do in your home with you that you couldn't do on your own? What can we do to put you into the right environment so that mentally, physically, spiritually, socially, you have a better opportunity in life than you had before?
Right.
There are all kinds of things. Another one, if you're really responsible for the health of a million people, you'd want to know how they're getting fed. And so there are a lot of things in the whole care process that you're going to rethink as you figure out a way to really care for people in that setting. 95% of your contact with a person is in the outpatient setting, not the inpatient setting.
Right.
And yet the outpatient setting is the most disaggregated, most complex, hardest to understand and get through and navigate for a patient that we've had to got today. As a matter of fact, you may have seen it. There was an article written in Forbes that is about my wife's story. Mm-hmm. And she was in a bad motor vehicle accident, went to the hospital. Make a long story short, I was given a stack of discharge orders, and I spent the next 6 months calling in 20 years worth of favors to find physicians who could care for her and coordinate her care in the outpatient setting. And when I was done with that, I was like, what does the average person do in the same circumstance?
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Right.
We have got to stop discharging people from our care.
Right.
We must be responsible for their next level of care, making for sure they get the right care at the right time after they leave the four walls of our institution.
So what does that say about our system, though, when you think about that? I mean, Terry, you've been doing this a long time. You know a lot of people. And your point about calling in favors for 20 years, like, is that a five-year journey for the industry? Is that a 10-year journey for the industry where this starts really I mean, as you know, I live in this innovation cycles all day long now. And it's fascinating to watch how fast, but frankly, how slow we're still going.
It's a great, great question. For Advent Health, I think it's a 7 to 10 year journey.
Right.
You can take only so much and so much time. So let's talk about some things we are doing.
Yeah.
Every person who comes into our institution, now institution's a bad term, hospital or emergency department, gets the opportunity to be care navigated to a doctor. And not only do they do that now, we make for sure the doctor appointment is scheduled.
Right.
And we're also finding that people don't always, even after they have it scheduled, show up to go see their doctor. What's going on and why? So we have care navigation. We never had it before across the settings. Number two, we're starting to talk about other things than just diagnoses. A person is more than the sum of their diagnoses. They're the sum of their thoughts, feelings, and beliefs. In the outpatient setting now, when you come into one of our urgent care centers or see one of our physicians, you get asked three questions. Do you have someone at home that loves you? Do you have a sense of peace today? Do you have a source of joy in your life? If the answer to those questions are not what it is a physician would expect in your life, there's another conversation with you about what's going on. And then we have the ability to be referred for additional treatment and therapy or care, depending upon the outcome of that conversation.
So when you play that out, underneath all that long term, 7 to 10 years, is VBC, is value based care going to be the trigger to ensure that holds? Or do you think we can still live in that world?
Yeah,
because
so
you've got a lot
question.
Of conviction on it.
Yeah, so let me go on with this. Yeah, I have a lot of conviction on this. Right now, our strategies are payer agnostic.
Right.
So one of our six large strategies is engage the consumer.
Right.
We have 20 never events that we want to take place for the consumer. You can't get them all done tomorrow.
Right.
An example. I want to give you an app on a phone that allows you to direct your life the way you direct the rest of your life. We would like for you to be able to text a doctor and get an answer. We would like for you to be able to use your phone and get a schedule done and make it appropriate in the next 3 days.
Right.
We'd like for you to have access to your records. That's rolling out this summer. So that's one of our consumer never events. Another consumer never events, what you're gonna have to pay. Today our industry is horrible. You know, what am I going to have to pay? Yeah, we don't know. We are working on a process where we will tell you what that's going to be, and we're going to take risk on that transaction if it's not perfect. Another never event is I never want you to figure out a way. I never want you to have to work hard to find us, meaning if you want primary care at a doctor's office, great. If you want somebody to come to your house, great. If you want to stop by a Centra Care on your way home, great. If you want to do it on an iPad, great. But I never want to lose you in the system, and I want to make for sure that I recognize that you took one of those visits as primary care, and we recognize that as a part of your care package, there is a way for you to get that. It may not be traditional primary care, but it's what it is you did and how you did it, and it made your life better. But I recognize it, and I keep track of it.
Right. And I've brought this up with a couple of people, and sometimes it's controversial, but when I hear you say that, in other industries there's a thing called lifetime value of a consumer. And you think about, this is a true lifetime value in my opinion, because we're talking about somebody's health. And so I'm curious how you think about that, because I know you so well, I know how convicted you are on these subjects, and I'm purposely kind of poking you a little bit on the VBC stuff, because my assessment, I'd love your response, is regardless of value, but to your point about payer agnostic, I believe, because I've seen you in action, that you're going to do this no matter what. Mm-hmm. And your true belief is, how do you really service the end consumer or the patient no matter what the situation is?
Sure. So if it's value-based care, we win because we're doing a much better job managing your care continuum.
Yeah.
If we're in a fee-for-service world with you, yeah, and you never one of our value-based care lives,
yeah,
you win because I still put something together that makes sense of your life.
Right.
Truth is I win because once I get you in our system, you're probably going to choose our services.
Right.
And so what I've asked the team is, how do you make our network card the most important card in your wallet? And with today, when your car won't start, you don't call your insurance company, you call AAA.
Right.
And when you need a tow, you don't call your insurance company, you call AAA. I want our network card in any market that we're in to be the most valuable healthcare card you have in your wallet. Yeah. More valuable than your insurance card, more valuable than your pharmacy card, more valuable than any other card that you may have. As a matter of fact, we want every consumer in every market to want the card strong enough that they'll find an insurance company that will follow the card.
Tell you. Yeah, that's a great point.
So get to the consumer,
yep,
and have the consumer pick based upon what it is we offer.
Right. And so putting a little bit of your financial hat on, and you think about investment mix now for the system, mm-hmm, given everything you just said, how do you think about sort of strategically thinking about your portfolio of assets now, back to the outpatient, back to that? Are you rethinking all that rather than building another tower, another hospital, or are you thinking through all that with the team now, I assume?
We are. We have a strategy committee, and one of the things that committee's done for the past 9 months is look at every market, every delivery site that we have in that market, and we have maps for the next 2, 5, and 7 years of how we need to build out that market so that we have the capacity, right, to never discharge a patient.
Right.
Here's the other thing I want to tell you. I don't think we will ever in every market have everything to offer you that you could ever need. When that's the case with you, my job is to navigate you to the right care even if we don't offer the service.
Right.
And then navigate you back so that we understand where you are in your care continuum.
So play off that for a second, Terry, and you think about, and I have talked to this Mark Kerouac at Bay State, Penny at Atlanta, a few others. Where do partnerships play into this? So if you think about the heavyweights that are coming at you, you know, the CVSs, the others that are either coming at you or partnering with you, how are you thinking about that now? Is that part of the mix as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have numerous partnerships that I won't go into today. Yeah. I don't think for a second we can do this on our own.
Yeah.
Nor do I think for a second that competition will go away on niche pieces in the downline that we're trying to help manage.
Yeah.
What's most important to me is that we find the right partners in the right places so that a life can be managed the way that person wants it to be managed, so that they bring continuity of care to themselves an irrationalized process for them and them and their family. And if we can have a partner do that and they win and we win in that transaction, that's fantastic. And we have multiples of those.
Got it. And the flip side of that P&L, which we were talking a little bit on the preamble, is sort of how you're thinking about the diversification side of it, the revenue side or alternative growth vehicles. That's a big hot topic. I was telling you, I think last week, Advisory Board does an annual survey of C-suite executives, health system executives, I think, and payer executives. But on the health system side, this is the first time in 3 years that cost wasn't the number one issue. It actually was alternative revenue streams. And so I'm curious, you know, what you think about that. Are you guys doing anything in that area?
Alternative revenue streams is a great, great conversation piece. As the price per unit continues to come down,
right,
in order to deliver and support the system that you have, you're going to have to fill the bucket up with more revenues, or you're going to have to redesign your care delivery process, or do both.
Both, right.
Most systems are doing both.
Yep.
And so, yes, are we looking to expand into areas that we're not in today from a revenue perspective? The answer is absolutely yes. Will we be doing more in the outpatient setting in the future than we're doing today? Absolutely, yes. We may have partnerships to do things in the outpatient setting that are very that we wouldn't have thought about doing 10 years ago.
Right.
But everybody is looking for, okay, healthcare is changing, payer mix is changing, what you get paid on a per unit basis is going to go down, and even if it's Medicare fee for service or Medicare MA, over time it's going to come down on a per click basis, however you want to look at that.
Right.
And you're going to have to figure out a way to deliver a system of care across a huge delivery network that is outside of the box of a typical hospital setting.
Right. And I think that's, you know, the like you have been in the health system side and provider side for a long time, and it's the stuff that always bothers me, because I think everybody looks at you all and says, oh, well, they're just going to continue to deliver acute care and high acuity and that's going to be it, and heads in the beds and they're going to move on. And it, you know, for those of us who have been on the inside, the whole point of this is trying to get an inside view. I think it's just a bad thought pattern for a lot of people, and maybe they just sort of want to put you in that box, but that's not what I hear when I talk to folks like you and others. And my assumption is when you're talking to your peers across the country, everybody is moving down this pattern.
Sure. Hospital care, as everybody knows, is very expensive, and as everybody knows, as technology gets better, yeah, and as you get better at running a system,
yeah,
you can use both mechanisms to keep people from using acute care services.
Right.
What you can't get away from is when somebody is really sick and needs open heart care, they need it.
Right.
So the question is how do you do a better job? Because I believe this. I believe in most marketplaces, you're taking care of 5 to 7% inside your box. The other 93 to 95% are getting care in a very randomized, catch-as-catch-can, unthoughtful process. If we were as good at organizing the 95% as we were at figuring out how to do an efficient open heart surgery process,
right,
we could revolutionize the way care is really delivered in a market.
Right.
Now you're talking about connection points that are legionly hard to get to because it's in to the 50th,
right,
not in.
Right.
And figuring out how to put the pipes in and have people connect up,
right,
and to be the intel inside to get the people where they need it so that it's organized and effective for them, if it was easy, it had been done already.
Right, that's a great point.
That's the reason it's going to take 10 years.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you saying that, because, you know, you could say, oh, well, it's going to 3 to 5, but I think you're dead on. I think it's, and that's the other thing about this industry I find fascinating, which is people, you know, they just want to go to the quick bullet. There is no bullet.
It's work.
Yeah, and it's redesigning completely.
And it's changing how people view a patient and when they need services. It's designing healthcare around a consumer as opposed to having the consumer have to fit into your nomenclature for healthcare.
Right.
And the whole, all the other industries have figured this out. And healthcare is on the cusp of being required to figure it out.
and just because we're here, I didn't put this on the prep material for you, but how do you think about that, though, because you've been around for a long time in this, the social system? How do you get your social system, the cultural attributes of what a healthcare system is and is not and what it will be, how do you get the organization there? And that takes time.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It starts with your cabinet.
Yeah.
Then it goes to your 300 senior leaders. I'm talking about my company now,
right.
Not nobody else's.
Right.
Then you have to personally figure out a way to get to your directors. And there's about 3,000 of those. And until, from your cabinet down to your middle management team, everybody philosophically and emotionally understands what you're trying to get done, why you're trying to get it done, and why they're there, because right. They can go work a lot of places.
Yep.
You probably don't move the needle as much as you need to move the needle. And it is a process, not a one-time event. It takes consistent communication every year, and it takes a really good expert helping the CEO communicate the message and helping the other leaders in your organization communicate the message and get the message out,
right.
So that people all are rowing off the same, or I should say, all singing off the same set of music.
Right. And so, sort of getting closer to sort of wrapping up a little bit on some of this, is what you're talking about is not only a long effort, it's a complicated effort, it's a cultural effort. You're going to need partners, you're going to need entrepreneurs, innovators, gaps that you don't have today. How do you think about that, working with your cabinet and the rest of the folks to sort of parse through that? And then what's the message to the average set of entrepreneurs or innovators out there on how they can help the average health system? And we talk about that a lot with our folks.
You know, the interesting thing is we are leading a group of people in this process, and having the cabinet lead their executive downlines in this process is a little bit like leading a group of people off the map, because we're trying to do something in a marketplace that really isn't done well.
Right.
And there's really not a roadmap, and you have to have a culture that allows you to try, fail, and try, fail until you get it right,
right.
Number one. Number two, you have to have people that understand that not everything's linear. And number three, you have to have people that are committed to the process, because it's easy to go back and just take care of people when they're sick.
Right.
So from that standpoint, you end up as a leader leading the learning process, not leading a direct line endeavor.
Right.
And if you're willing to lead a learning process, most people are willing to learn with you.
Right. And so do you need outsiders for that? So
yeah.
Like, as you probably know,
we do.
When you drop in sometimes outsiders that may have sometimes a culture clash. Other times it may be, you know, innovative.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So in our consumer promises, our 20 Never events, the team that's running that, they have done focus groups, and they have had multiple contrarians come look at our consumer Never events. People like Lyft, I shouldn't have listed them, but I'm not going to list the rest of them. But we had companies that you wouldn't typically think of that have to do things with consumers every day come look at what we're trying to get done with the consumer and just laugh and say, yeah, no, let's think through this. And after, you know, several months of that, right. you then hone in on, okay, we've learned a lot in this process. Now let's go to the consumer and get what they think. Now let's go to our docs and see what they think. And it was amazing, but it took a 9-month process of really learning from outsiders how it is we need to rethink our own business.
Right. Now, I'm not going to tell you who told me this, and hopefully I'm not relaying your secret sauce, but someone told me you were even interviewing people while you all were out in San Francisco.
We were.
During J.P. Morgan this past year.
As a matter of fact, we had 5 contrarians set up, and they came and reviewed our Never events for the consumer at that conference. One of them was a payer. I'm not going to go through. But the truth is, it was a wonderful time for us to get people to go, yeah, I can come beat that up for you.
Right.
Be happy to.
Right.
And we're going to use JP Morgan Conference for all kinds of things like that in the future.
Right. Well, it's the epicenter now. It's the Super Bowl of healthcare right now.
It is a great place to get work done quickly.
Right, without many plane flights,
yes.
As I always say. And then, so just finishing up, I'd love to get your thoughts on sort of big tech, go back into sort of CVS, Walgreens, some of the incumbents coming in now, and how, I know we talked about partnerships, but, your thoughts about where that ends up in 10 years. Is this, the next evolution of what they are? Is it a blip in the radar? Are these really going to become established presence? I mean, you think about what Google and Microsoft and others are trying to do, Amazon. I'm just curious, sort of your thoughts on how you think about them entering into the space in a much bigger way. I mean, anytime anything gets to 20% of GDP, everybody's piling in.
No question. In our 2025 planning process, one of the pieces we're working on is how do we partner with all the big organizations that have access to capital in a way that I don't, even at our size, and use their knowledge, expertise, and thinking to help us bring a better product to the market.
Right.
So how do we use the big five? And not use is a terrible word. How do we learn the best that we can from the big five and to make a difference for the consumer that we serve? In our particular case, we would do that because we are a faith-based, consumer-oriented, provide the best care organization in our market.
Right.
For them, they would do it because it's something new and novel and would help their revenue base from a stockholder perspective.
Right.
I'm not blind to that. I'm great with that. They're going to bring thoughts and processes and resources to solving problems that I can't. Great with me. I would love in our process to be able to tell you in 5 years we were successful in doing something with each of those five.
Right.
And that it's embedded in making a huge difference in how we look at, treat, and are able to offer a healthcare system to people in our markets.
And do you think, one last kind of probing question on this, do you think, putting your business strategy hat on, do you think these become, because we all know sort of the market dynamics in each one of the relative markets, do these become market-defining partnerships in certain markets? And what I mean by that is, you end up blocking certain things taking place in certain markets because you've basically set up certain relationships a certain way. Now, care is free-flowing, we know that, but end of the day, your long-term value, all the things that you can do better than, say, your next competitor, could be by the cluster of not only what you deliver, but also the cluster of the partnerships that you have within your portfolio.
I think that's true, and I think there'll be some exclusive partnerships in some markets, but probably not with the big five you're talking about.
It's fair.
The question is going to be, with those kind of partnerships, are you able to execute better than your competitor?
Yeah.
Providing tools and resources aren't any good unless you can do something with them.
Right.
And I would rather everybody in the country have access to a great idea if you can get it implemented.
Right.
I don't believe that over time a partnership that limits growth with one of those big organizations is going to be a sustainable partnership.
Got it. Well, this has been great. This has been refreshing. That's why I always love talking to you, because it's, we weren't talking about the Trump administration. We weren't talking about the next election. We weren't talking about value-based care. We're just saying, listen, it's the right thing to do. We need to execute, and we need to plan for the next 7 to 10 years. And it's exactly what you guys are doing. So this is exactly what I want to have you on. And I can't thank you enough for doing it, and I can't thank you enough for the friendship, and thank you again, Terry.
Yeah, Keith, thank you very much.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us in this episode of Healthcare is Hard, a podcast for insiders. Thank you, Keith Figlioli of LRV Health, for leading this conversation. You can find Keith on Twitter. He is at Keith Figlioli. Figlioli is spelled F-I-G-L-I-O-L-I. I am also on Twitter. I am at MedTechTom. You can find us both on LinkedIn. So please do share this episode on either Twitter or LinkedIn or wherever else you want to do it. And tag us if you do. We'd love to be part of any conversation. As I said up top, the Digital Healthcare Innovation Summit is happening on December 10th in Boston. I'm working with our advisory board to put together a stellar agenda. I'm very excited about it, actually, so I hope you'll join us. Go to dhis.net to register. As I mentioned, the early bird discount is expiring on Friday. Sorry about the late notice, but you can still get in. And you can use the code DHIS10. Save yourself another $100. That's it, folks. We'll have another Healthcare is Hard podcast for you in October. And of course, we'll be rolling out the Breaking Health podcast as well, probably next week. So stay tuned, stay in touch, and we'll see you at DHIS in December.